I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi there, and welcome again to the Explaining History podcast. And this is the second of these slightly alternative recordings I'm doing at the moment, based on the kind of the crisis here in Great Britain. Words I never really thought I'd find myself recording. I want to delve slightly more into the ways in which this crisis is being seen, and some of the misapprehensions, I think, that are prevalent. One of the tropes that is frequently wheeled out in the British press, at the very least, is a comparison between the great constitutional crisis, or the great institutional crisis of 1629, when the king then, Charles I, decided in order to deal with his the problems that he was accumulating and to acquire easy access to wealth, to funds, to prorogue Parliament, which he did for 11 years until 1640, when after a disastrous war with the Scots, he had to bring Parliament back and get them to vote through subsidies to pay his debts. Okay, I think that at the moment the analogy is perhaps partially right, but largely problematic. The comparison between the current Conservative Party proroguing Parliament for 5 weeks in order to drive through a no-deal Brexit, or whatever solution that they are hoping to bring about to the entire crisis, it's not that it hasn't got any parallels with 1629 or 1640, but it's got much clearer parallels with, for example, Erdogan's Turkey. It's got much clearer parallels, obviously, with Trump's America, and it's got much clearer parallels with the wave of populist autocrats using popular nationalism around the world at the moment. That is the example that the Conservative Party is looking to. They're not looking to what Charles I did or didn't do in the 17th century. They are studying what they believe is a trend globally. And they would be right to study this, because there is a global trend towards the eruption of authoritarian populist nationalism all over the world. Italy has just narrowly been spared a Salvini premiership. In Indonesia, India, Israel, in America, in Hungary, in Poland, and in a range of other countries, Turkey, around the world, all of a sudden electorates seem to be opting for authoritarian figures who uniquely believe that they are speaking over the heads of established elites, over the heads of bureaucrats, over the heads of elected leaders, over the heads of the established media class, directly to the people. Trump's use of Twitter, for example, is a clear indicator of that. An address to the people that seems to bypass conventional channels. Now, people blame social media. I think social media is only a kind of an enabler of something far, far deeper. Why is it in Great Britain that we seem to be facing this phenomena of a political leader like Boris Johnson, a conservative politician, who is acting in ways which are more befitting of a kind of like a nationalist revolutionary? The whole point about conservatism always was, you know, the clue is in the title, that conservatism throughout the 20th and early the 19th century was sceptical of big ideas, looked to a patrician society for its social model, looked into the kind of bucolic past as a way of trying to navigate the present and the future, and thought that change is a fundamentally bad thing. And when you consider the revolutions of the 20th century and the violence that they engendered, there's a great deal really to be said for those who are sceptical of change. We now have a political party whose supporters are, and when polled, will say that a no-deal Brexit, this fundamental rupture with the European Union, which they believe will bring about a newly remodeled Britain that they would like to see. This is so enticing that it is worth the destruction of the Conservative Party, the permanent crippling of the British economy, and even the destruction of the Union and the loss of Scotland and perhaps even Northern Ireland. What they're speaking of is an English national revolution. And this is not representative of a majority of the population by any stretch of the imagination, but certainly they have managed to capture the levers of power within the Conservative Party. Now, there are a number of reasons for this. Firstly, this has to do with a kind of a deep crisis of capitalism. The crisis of capitalism that began in 2008 and was not solved by quantitative easing, by pumping vast amounts of fiat money into the British and indeed into the world economy. All that happened is neoliberalism has limped along on life support. Now, during this period, what we have seen is the beginnings of the breakup of globalisation. It might be a temporary retreat for globalisation. It might be a permanent or fragmentation into more regional groupings of the world economy. But the globalisation that began in the 1990s following the end of the Soviet Union and continued until the bankers' crisis of 2008 and relied on free flows of money, mobile labour markets, and an expanding labour market in the third world, and the ability of manufacturing countries like China to give the first world essentially a pay rise by manufacturing lots and lots of cheap things. That was derailed in 2008, and it hasn't really come back to life. It hasn't become a profitable entity, and projected growth rates for the rest of the 21st century are pretty dismal. So there are two wings to particularly British capitalism. You might think of them as an industrial manufacturing capitalism and the financial capitalism. The industrial manufacturing capitalism does not want Brexit. It does not see it as in its interests. It sees that it is the disruption of supply lines, of just-in-time supply networks, and the flow of goods and services in Europe, and it will cause it all sorts of harm. The disruptive financial capitalist elements, those that are looking for chaos in order to buy up and sell off distressed assets and to short the pound and all these kind of money-making wheezes, which do virtually no good whatsoever to the economy or to the population at large, but are able to help certain quite sharp business figures with certain sort of sharp business practices to suck huge wealth out of the economy. They're the ones that will do very well. Now, these were traditionally industry and finance, and of course agriculture as well, the supporters of the Conservative Party. The Conservative Party, the premier party of the capitalist class in Great Britain throughout the 20th century, now faces a choice. Which of these two groupings will it opt for? And Brexit forced this choice because you can't please both of them. And so
hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
So the financier class has been embraced. The funders of Brexit, the funders of Nigel Farage's Brexit Party, and also donors to the Conservative Party. Boris Johnson has seen a huge inflow of cash into its coffers, into the Tory Party's coffers just recently, on the understanding that he will bring about a hard Brexit. Well, they're chiefly interested in avoiding the EU tax haven regulations, which are going to come in January. But in the long term as well, a low tax, low regulation Great Britain will suit them, but also one that has been hit by a wave of disaster capitalism. If you read Naomi Klein's brilliant book, The Shock Doctrine, one of the points she makes is that at the heart of neoliberalism is the belief that societies can be radically remoulded when they are faced with an enormous economic shock or a military crisis or an environmental crisis or something like that, very quickly the deck chairs can be rearranged and people are forced then to accept what is left. And this is essentially another part of the kind of the great Brexit gambit. Again, none of that has anything to do with the 17th century, and it has an awful lot to do with the conditions that not just Great Britain, but people around the world find themselves in at the moment, 10 years on from the world economic crisis, where very little has been actually resolved. And the way in which that economic crisis was resolved was primarily to benefit finance over civil society. So the example that Boris Johnson is drawing at the moment is really very, very contemporary. Another element of that is permanent shock, permanent outrage. Johnson has looked very carefully at what Donald Trump has done in America and has rather admired it. When Donald Trump says something outrageous on Twitter, when he tries to bring out anti-Islamophobic travel bans, when he makes offensive comments about women, all this sort of stuff, it rightly enrages his opponents. It creates this huge culture war in America where one side, a liberal side, says that's homophobic or Islamophobic or something else. And then Trump's angry base, sick of kind of metropolitan liberal intellectuals telling them, talking down to them and telling them that they're bigots, even though they essentially are. They react with furious anger and they support Trump even further. The real action happens when Trump's supporters, the, you know, the Koch brothers or whoever else, receive legislation that is to their liking, presidential decrees which are to their liking, tearing up environmental regulation, labour rights and all these sorts of things. Everything else is a kind of a sideshow designed to draw attention away from these fundamental points, but designed to create endless culture wars. And I suppose this really kind of speaks volumes about where we are at, 10 years after the world economic crisis, in that Western democratic leaders now instinctively understand, not all of them, but quite a few of them, instinctively understand that the key to success is outrage. The key to success is to be able to create as much chaos, as much crisis, as much madness, as much anger as possible. And the tools to doing that are right in front of them on a smartphone. If a British politician appears to be more incompetent, more foolish, more imbecilic than any of their predecessors, that can actually be interpreted as a positive thing for that particular politician's position of power. Because, sure, they will outrage their base, they will outrage their opponents, and their base will come to support them and say things like, that's just Boris being Boris or Donald being Donald. And the base that instinctively identifies with this individual that they know from years and years of TV. It's interesting that the number of people in these sorts of positions, Trump, Johnson, and others, who have been essentially entertainers before this, and perhaps one way of looking at all of this is that there's some kind of toxic overlap between reality TV and the realities of politics, and the kind of the all-pervasive reach of 21st century media has had some huge distorting effect. I'm not sure, but the fact that these figures are often kind of household names, or they have been names within a particular niche subculture. Bolsonaro, for example, in Brazil is another classic example. Their brand with their base is recognisable and identifiable and relatable, and people seem to like them on that basis. You know, this is somebody that talks and thinks and speaks like me. Well, the reality is, of course, that's not true. These are people who are embedded within elite class power and privilege, and don't speak like ordinary people or live like ordinary people at all. But they affect a sort of like a certain down-to-earthishness or rootsishness in order to kind of connect with them. And they wouldn't be the first politicians to do that by a long shot. George W. Bush pretended to be this kind of folksy, down-home, cowpoke individual, is really who's kind of a member of American political dynasty and has had the best education money can buy. And similarly, Ronald Reagan, who certainly had far more claim to being from relatively humble origins, played the kind of American everyman, and the reality is really quite different. So that kind of we when people talk of there being a sort of like a populist or nationalist international, I don't necessarily think that international is a kind of a concept that can apply here, because unlike a socialist international or international, where there are essentially shared goals of solidarity beyond borders and all that kind of stuff, here you have national actors who are actually incapable in any meaningful way of showing solidarity to one another whatsoever. And the speed at which Trump is actually able to turn on Putin or to enact anti-Russian policies if it suits him is quite revealing. There is a kind of international understanding between all these autocrats that there is something to be gained from modelling each other's behaviour, and something to be gained from having sympathies with one another to the extent that each is helping the other to deter democratic processes in their own countries, or to actively stamp them out. So in this discussion of the kind of the report from the coup, I suppose the thing to look at in Great Britain is the coup itself in its wider international and historic context, why it is part of the British ruling class is looking to deter democracy, to use a Chomskyan term, and to, in order to drive the British economy off a cliff, and also where they get their inspiration from. And as I said, it's not really to do with the 17th century, it's to do with the 21st. Anyway, I hope you found that useful, and I'll catch you on the next Explaining History podcast. Thanks, and all the best.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.